This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Anne Heche has starred in such films as Psycho, Return to Paradise, 6 Days, 7 Nights, Wag the Dog, Donnie Brasco, Walking and Talking, and the current film, The Third Miracle. But she's also famous as half of the most public lesbian couple in Hollywood. 3 years ago, she and Ellen DeGeneres began a relationship that coincided with DeGeneres coming out and her sitcom character coming out. Heche and DeGeneres appeared together in public as a couple and spoke about their love, leading to speculation about how this would affect their careers. Now Heche has written and directed one of the 3 stories in the new HBO movie, If These Walls Could Talk, Part 2, which premieres Sunday. The film tells 3 different lesbian love stories, each set in a different decade. Heche's episode is set in the year 2000. Ellen DeGeneres and Sharon Stone star as a couple who want to have a baby and are looking for a sperm donor so that Stone can conceive. In this scene, DeGeneres is going through the profiles of potential donors, trying to winnow down the list. She's upset that she's incapable of biologically fathering the child.
If we had that kind of luck that we could say, oops, look what we did out of our love. But we can't do that. So now we have to look at sperm and pick the guy that's closest to me, that has blue eyes and blonde hair, and I don't care anymore. I don't care. I mean, really, is his sperm going to be different because he's an electrical engineer than the guy that works at a hardware store, even, you know, that has a little red vest? What's wrong with that? Interests, hiking. He walks. Wow, that's special. You must be a special guy.
You know, in the sitcom, Ellen played somebody very self-conscious. And In your movie, there's a love scene that she plays opposite Sharon Stone. How did she feel about doing that? It would have been something very out of character on Ellen.
It was. Oh, well, one end, they wouldn't let her do it. I mean, that's a very
true,
clear
right?
thing. They put a warning label as she was holding hands with the girl, let alone partaking in anything more physical. Yes, it was very vulnerable for her. I mean, I think it's the most vulnerable she's ever been. One in wanting to not shock the audience with too much. I mean, she was already showing the differences in her as a woman. And so that was more revealing of her than she had been. And I think she was nervous about giving the audience too much. So that was one of her concerns with doing the love scene. But another concern of hers was that she didn't want me to feel... I don't know, feel like she was cheating on me. And we had had this argument over you know, me doing love scenes when I have been in movies, and she didn't like it. And the boundary of physicality is a different thing, a difficult thing for her to kind of process through. You know, she says once it becomes physical, then it's real. You know, you're still kissing a person. Even if you don't like that person, you're kissing the person. And especially when it's somebody like Sharon Stone, and they got along so well and they had such a great chemistry, she was very concerned about my feelings around it. I, of course, wrote it and spent 4 months making her do it. So, and trying to convince her every single day, like, come on, honey, it's Sharon Stone. I mean, for Pete's sakes, I could have hired somebody else. But I gave her Sharon, you know, complain when it's somebody that you don't like at all and is very unattractive. But we did. We debated it. And I mean, ultimately, what it came down to was a decision that we were showing a truthful lesbian relationship. And to me, a very truthful part of our relationship is our passion.
I'm wondering if your thoughts about the possibility of you becoming a mother changed when you started your relationship with Ellen and weren't in a heterosexual relationship. I don't know if you are remotely interested in being a mother.
I was when I was writing this. Ellen and I became very obsessed, kind of, with what would we, if we had a baby, how would we do it? And I think I needed that in order to write it. I don't think the relationship changed my point of view on being a mother. I love children. I've always wanted to have children. And I think how it changed, actually, is that it didn't become a focus of what our relationship was going to be about. And I think in the heterosexual relationships that I've had, there is a very strict journey along with that. Okay, you go out for a couple of years, then you move in, and then maybe you're going to talk about getting married, and then you're going to talk about having children. And that seems like a destiny that has been placed for women throughout history. I mean, that's what our job is. And I think there's an awareness of that much more in heterosexual relationships than in homosexual relationships, because it's not so easy. As Ellen says in the movie, you know, we can't make a mistake. So when a same-sex couple brings a child into their relationship, it takes so much more time, so much more thought. There are no accidents. You have to, I mean, for some people, it's a 5-year process, for some, a 10-year process, as in heterosexual relationships too. But it's not just, it's not an easy goal to attain. And so it's more thought provoking when you're thinking of having children. And that's how my relationship influenced my understanding of having kids, just that it's a lot more difficult.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Anne Heche, and she wrote and directed one of the stories in the new installment of If These Walls Could Talk, which will premiere on HBO Sunday, March 5th, and it stars Ellen DeGeneres and Sharon Stone. Now, I want to ask you, your father was an itinerant fundamentalist choir director. Would you describe what he did exactly?
And many other things.
Well, we'll get to the other things, but what did he do as the choir director, and why did it entail traveling around a lot?
He sang with flair. The traveling didn't have anything to do with being in church. The traveling had to do with our financial circumstances and running away from our debt. The two kind of tried to go hand in hand, as he was constantly trying to explain why we didn't have a home. But he just, whatever town we were in, he would just go to the church, and he was a wonderful pianist and organist and had a beautiful voice talent for making people sing. So that just kind of happened by accident. They didn't go hand in hand.
Why was the family always in debt?
Because he didn't have a job other than being a choir director. He just couldn't seem to settle down into a normal job, which of course we found out later, and as I understand it now, was because he had another life. He wanted to be with men, and yet he was grounded in this family. I mean, he had 4 children, and they were very Christian. So certainly, coming out as being a gay man, especially then, was not even allowed. I mean, certainly for him, I can't imagine how difficult that must have been. But because he wasn't allowed to be who he was, he split off and went to find his love elsewhere than with the family. So we kept moving to try to be with him and never knowing why he was going away to these different places. Later found out it was to be with his lovers.
Do you think the traveling a lot, too, made it more difficult for his secret life to be discovered?
Oh, yes, definitely, without a doubt. Oh, yeah, we would move to New Jersey, and all of a sudden he had to be in New York all the time. I mean, it was just, first we were in Ohio, he had to be in New Jersey. Then we were in New Jersey, and funnily enough, whatever he was working on went bankrupt. You know, I mean, the whole thing was just a scam to get away from his family, really, so he could be who he was. I mean, I only have that compassion now after years of therapy, but I had some tough days about him.
Did you feel very rejected by him because he was always trying to be someplace else?
Sure. I mean, sure. When you don't have another experience to compare it to, you kind of think all dads are like that until you witness it in other families. And as a child, we have such a wonderful thing as children that we can just make the best of everything and say, well, this must be what everybody else is experiencing, and I've got to make the best of it. You don't know that it's not good until you witness something that it seems better.
Were you brought up strictly as a fundamentalist? And if so, did that affect the kind of popular culture you were exposed to, the movies you could watch, the TV shows?
Movie. I couldn't watch movie or TV. None of it. None of it. I couldn't watch any of it. No, books were not pushed in our direction either. It was a very limited scope. And it's broadened since then. I mean, even my family views have, my mother is still a Christian, and I think she would hesitate to say that she's a fundamentalist because it has a negative connotation. Of course, I say, well, gay does too, and I call myself a gay. But she has broadened her perspective, and yet at that time and with my father, it was a very, very deep fundamental belief system.
So you couldn't watch any movies or TV?
No, I think the first movie I saw was Star Wars. And we made a big deal out of it. It was a huge deal. And I was, 9 maybe. So funny, I got to work with him. But it was a huge deal that we could go to the movies.
And did your friends have similar upbringings, or were they seeing lots of things that you weren't allowed to?
You know what? Definitely. We moved a lot, so I was constantly changing schools. So I didn't even gather a group of friends really when I was younger. But yes, definitely. As soon as I would walk into schools and what they were talking about, I was very, very naive about the world. Didn't even know, for example, that what Jewish people were. And I went to a school when we moved to New Jersey, and I was 7 or 8 years old, and met a Jewish girl who became my best friend, and didn't understand when my parents were saying, well, you have to bring her to church and have her accept the Lord as her Savior. And to me, then I was saving this Jewish girl, and then she took me to temple, and I was like, this is cool, which of course didn't go over well with my parents. But somehow, I mean, we were so, so strict in this belief system that I got her to come to church, convincing her that she was a sinner, to get down on her knees and ask the Lord Jesus Christ to come into her heart. She had no idea what she was talking about, and neither did I. And yet I had been taught that she was a sinner.
My guest is Anne Heche. She wrote and directed one of the three stories in the new HBO movie, If These Walls Could Talk, Part 2, which premieres on Sunday. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is actress Anne Heche, and she wrote and directed one of the stories in the new HBO movie, If These Walls Could Talk, Part 2, which premieres Sunday, March 5th. So your father was a choir director who traveled a lot because he was living this secret life as a homosexual.
Right.
How did you find out?
He was dying of AIDS in 83. It was still not named anything yet. Right at that time, it was the gay disease. It was just starting to get known as AIDS. And there were starting to be articles in newspapers about it. And of course, at that time, it was, you know, you can get AIDS by touching somebody, and you can get AIDS by hugging somebody. It just, whatever it was, you could get AIDS if you were around this person. My father was never open about his relationships or his disease with us. It was the doctors that told us about 2 weeks before he died. And by that point, he was so delirious, he didn't even know who we were. So we never were able to confront him about it. And it's a very tragic story about somebody who has to hide so far that they, you know, I do believe that we create disease in our bodies because of shame. And I think the shame was so huge for him, and the running and the hiding, and hiding who you are is death, really. And I learned that very soon on, and I think that's why I'm able to be as open about myself as I am, because if you're not, I've already witnessed what can happen. And in that, he gave me an amazing gift.
You were, what you said, 12 when your father died. When you realized that...
I was 13.
13. When you realized mm-hmm. that he had a secret life, and that his secret life contradicted his own religious beliefs, mm-hmm. did it affect your religious beliefs? I don't know how strongly you identified as a Christian at the time.
I was a very big questioner of religion, even though I was a good girl, and so I did what I was told and believed what I was told until this future time I knew when I would be able to explore my own arenas of life. Certainly by that point, we were on shaky ground anyway as a family, and so our religious beliefs did not seem to really help us. I mean, I think it helped my mother, and I think it still does. For me, it was a very discouraging time. A lot of questions about God and who God is, but started me on my journey of my own spirituality, which was also one of the gifts I received from that death.
How did your family life change after he died? Did you stop moving around a lot?
We did, actually. I got to go to high school for 4 years, and in one city we moved after he died, and it was my mom and I lived in a one-bedroom apartment and in Chicago, and so that was interesting. We kind of became roommates, and I think we were both adrift and knowing how to express our emotions to each other. It was very difficult, and we were trying to stay afloat and make enough money to pay our rent. So it was a strange time for us.
What did your mother do to make a living?
She was a secretary for a stockbroker, and the stockbroker said, "You're too smart to be a secretary. Why don't you become a stockbroker?" So he sent her to school. And it was my mother who was a housewife for 26 years. It was pretty phenomenal what she was doing. And she didn't like being a stockbroker, so she doesn't do that anymore. But that's certainly what got us through 4 years of life until I started on a soap opera.
Now, I think your brother was killed in a car crash a few months after your father's death.
Yes. How do you know all this information? Yes, he was.
So that
he was. I mean, 3 months to the day.
That must have been pretty devastating to have to deal with those two blows back to back and handle it as a kid. Did you think that you were like being singled out by God for suffering?
I don't think I put it in those terms. No, I certainly think that those questions were floating around, the why us issues that so many of us have. And certainly that was an issue, you know, why us? I mean, this is too close a period of time and we haven't mourned the first death, and how do we mourn this one? And, you know, it was very confusing and very baffling as to why it was happening, certainly.
You had said that when you were young, seeing movies and TV shows kind of violated the religious principles in your house. You weren't exposed to much of that. After your father's death, did those ground rules change, and were you able to have more freedom?
Oh, certainly. By the time my dad died, a lot of things were opening up. I mean, at that point, I was working in dinner theater to help pay the rent. You know, I was 12 years old, and dinner theater you see a lot. Dinner theater actually was the way I understood that my father was gay, because I met the first gay people I had ever met in my life, you know, and it was so clear to me, like, oh, that's who he is, you know.
What did you see in some of the men you met in dinner theater that reminded you of your father?
Flair. A femininity that, oh, brother. I mean, first of all, they all wore makeup. I came home from one night from dinner theater when I was taking care of my father, and I come home at 2 o'clock in the morning. He's putting on my mascara, and I'm 13 years old, and I look in the bathroom, and I said, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just going out at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the man was so sick he could hardly stand up. I mean, it was just, you know, and of course, you're like, oh, well, sure, he's wearing my mascara that I only wore for dinner theater. I mean, I was 13. You know, and he's just explaining it to me like it's nothing, and then puts this orange crappy powder all over his face, you know, and then you see it in dinner, and you go, oh, well, he's gay. You know, of course. He wants to look like he always has a suntan, whatever that's about. We're like the palest family in the world. Ellen calls me clear, and he's putting on sun foundation to go play the piano at a gay bar. The whole thing was just so silly.
Did you say anything to your mother when you made this connection?
I said a couple of things to her along the way about my observations, and I think it was very difficult for her to hear. There were a lot of things, a lot of issues she was dealing with, not only what he was going through, but what the family was going through financially and trying to figure out how to keep it together. And so she had a lot on her plate, and I think my adding to it, my observations, was a little too much at the time, but we've certainly talked about it now.
So you were in dinner theater from the age of like 12 or 13 on to help earn a living, to help support the family. Were you Annie in anything?
Oh, funny. No, but my father wanted me to be, of course, another telltale sign. he dropped so many hints that none of us picked up on. No, but I did do music. My first play that I had auditioned for was Music Man, and I played Amaryllis in Music Man because, of course,
sure.
I used to sing with my father in church. So that's how I kind of started in to dinner theater, was because I had at least a good enough voice to carry a tune, and that's how I started.
So you think when your father was directing choir in church, he really wanted to be doing musical comedy?
You know what? Yes, as a matter of fact. He was so typical. He just wanted to do musicals. Yeah, I'm sure that was his fantasy, certainly.
It must have been a little strange for you in the sense that during the early years of your life, seeing movies or TV shows was considered bad, you know, sinful maybe. And then suddenly you're in dinner theater performing, and that's good because you're supporting the family.
Things that will happen when you need money.
Right.
Point of view that changes very quickly when on the streets. I mean, things had to change. There was my father's death and his split life was a huge wake-up call to all of us. I mean, there was just so many things that had to be changed because of that reality. And even though Music Man was a pretty, you know, Musical theater is very innocuous. It's not quite going into the depths of strangeness. I mean, I remember one of the conversations, they were all grounded, all of our parents' belief was grounded in a morality. So, for example, seeing Grease was out because there was talk of pregnancy and abortion outside of marriage, you know, so we couldn't see that. And I remember that being a big argument for my brother and sister, who were at that point teenagers, and just how ridiculous that was that we couldn't see Grease. But for my mom, it was, but that's not something that we talk about. There's no way that you would ever be pregnant before you would get married. I mean, it was just a natural thing for her. It wasn't like she was saying it's bad, it's evil. She certainly had a reason for it. And, you know, morality issues were very strict with her.
Anne Heche will be back in the second half of the show. She wrote and directed one of the three stories in the new HBO movie, If These Walls Could Talk, Part 2, which premieres on Sunday. It stars her partner, Ellen DeGeneres, and Sharon Stone. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with actress Anne Heche. She wrote and directed one of the three stories in the new HBO movie, If These Walls Could Talk, Part 2, which premieres Sunday. When we left off, we were talking about growing up in a fundamentalist family. When her father died, she started performing in dinner theater to help support the family. So when you were in dinner theater, I think it was when you were in high school, you were offered a role on an afternoon soap.
Right, right.
Didn't accept it?
When I was in 10th grade, I didn't accept it just because I didn't want to have to move again and move my mom again. And we were just getting settled and, you know, tears were stopping being, you know, cried every day. And so I wanted to keep that stability. They came back to me when I was a senior and I did accept. And that was a difficult thing. There wasn't very much support for me doing a soap opera, no, from my family. No.
Right.
But it was good money.
So after high school, you went to New York and did, I think it was,
the day after I graduated, yeah.
And it was what, Another World?
Another World. I played twins on Another World for 4 years.
You played twins, so what was the difference between each of the two twins?
Oh, pretty obvious, good and evil. Although then I kind of tried to mellow them out, but in the beginning it was very much, you know, good and evil, prim and proper versus the crazy wild girl who will do anything.
How did you dress and make up differently for each of the twins?
Oh, it was so silly. I mean, it was so obvious. It was, you know, skin-tight dresses with high pumps. Oh, I can't believe I played that character. You know, lots of makeup and the whole nine yards of just, she's the bad girl. It was just so funny that I did. And then the other one was, you know, Little Miss Marley. Her name describes how she dressed. Marley. You know, she was in pale pastel colors and all of the things I would never put on my body today.
Did you relate to either of these characters?
I did. Of course, I put myself into them. I mean, the greatest thing about a soap opera is that you get to be anything. As long as you say your lines, you can be anything. So I created these, you know, fantasy characters for me. I was on the search of finding myself. I was 18, got this amazing opportunity, and was finding myself in life and through these characters. That was my, you know, beginning of becoming an adult. And it was just, yeah, you know, it was fantastic fun too. So the one character was just became the funnest person in the world to play. Of course, she was the evil one. But it just became so much fun, and she was so daring, and I could do anything that I wanted. And it was just, you know, there was so much support around the character, and we just went for it. I mean, every day was just a blast.
Did you get paid double because you had two parts?
Only after the third year. Only when I could negotiate. They got me real cheap when I was out of high school.
Did you go to college?
I didn't. No, those were my college years on the soap opera.
Do you regret that at all? Do you feel you missed something? Or
I used to have a real hard time with not being smart. I would think that I wasn't smart, and I didn't go to school, and I wasn't smart. Now I know I'm smart. No, I'm kidding. Now I've just come to understand that there are different paths that have already been created for us. And if you listen to that and you're going down the right path, then things are going to fall into place. And I was actually going to go to school after I finished my 4 years at the soap opera and got another movie the week before I left with Jessica Lange. And I thought, you know, somebody's telling me something. I mean, I guess I'm supposed to do this. And then just job after job came, and it was very clear that this was the path I was supposed to be on, and my training ground and schooling had been in the best acting school in the world, and that there's nothing better than working 5 days a week and being in front of a camera every single day. So my training was my training. So I've come to accept and embrace that about myself. Not that I wouldn't like to be, you know, smarter and have read more books and am constantly claiming ignorance to so many different topics. But I know who I am and what I was meant to be by the journey that God has created for me. So I feel better about it now.
One of your breakthrough film roles was in Walking and Talking. You and Catherine Keener star as best friends. Then your relationship changes after you get engaged and she doesn't even have a boyfriend. Now, this was an independent film.
Nicole Holofcener was the director.
Yeah, an independent film is the direction that your co-star, Catherine Keener, headed in for a long time, whereas you went more toward the big budget pictures.
Was
that an intentional move, or is that just kind of what happened?
No, I switched it up as much as I could. I mean, some of the independents that I did weren't seen. But that's always been. I just finished an independent film a couple of months ago. I've always wanted to shake it up. To me, I'm drawn to the parts more than I am, what's different for me, what's unique for me. It doesn't usually have to do with anything financial. I mean, 6 Days, Seven Nights was my biggest movie. And I mean, yes, the opportunity to work with Harrison floored me, but I also hadn't had an opportunity to play comedy. And I love comedy. So it always, whatever the genre was that it took me, and if I could explore a different character in different territory, each one was a challenge, and I always wanted to challenge myself. So if it was a bigger budget, that happened to be so. And if it was an independent, then I would do that as well and still feel that way and feel that way about directing movies, too. I don't have a goal to be a huge movie director with a ton of money. I think we waste a lot of money on films, actually, and could feed a lot of countries with the money that they pay in overtime to the crew, because the lighting should be better. You know, there are a lot of things that I feel like are misplaced finances. But, you know, it's fun to do big budget. It's fun to do low budget.
I think when you and Ellen became a couple, it was, I think, just at about the time you were about to sign on to 6 Days and Seven Nights.
Right, right.
And I believe you were advised not to say anything publicly until the deal was finished.
Yes, that's true.
But you did say something publicly about being
a couple. Yes, I did, and the people who told me got fired.
You fired your own management after that?
Yes, and I don't want to make light. I mean, I do want to make light of it because it's over, and now everybody is healed, and I have compassion for what they went through, too. I mean, it was a whole brand new concept for Hollywood that this person who's about to catapult their career into a new level by working with somebody like Harrison Ford would actually turn that down when it's threatened, turn that down for love. I mean, it's such a skewed perspective on life, but some people have it. You know, come on, you can work with Harrison Ford and you can be a huge movie star and, you know, just live in the closet. I mean, fine, like her, but don't tell us about it. Don't tell anybody about it. Which goes against every single thing I believe, and I can thank my father for that, I think. I just, not in a million years would that have been an option for me. And the beauty of it was that I still got the part, so you know, there you have it.
Well, did they test you further or think about it a lot more or talk with you about how you were going to handle the public aspect of your private life before making the deal official?
No, they didn't. What was on the table was if you go to the premiere Volcano, which was a movie I did with Tommy Lee Jones, you don't have to run out and rent it, but it's anyway, I was doing it. And we had a premiere, and actually what was put on the table was if you go to this premiere, you will not get the offer for the Harrison Ford movie.
I mean, if you go to the premiere with Ellen?
With Ellen.
Right.
You will not get the offer for the Harrison Ford movie. And that was my ultimatum.
And people from the movie told you that?
I don't want to say the particular voices. I mean, there were a lot of people who, yes, warned me to not go with Ellen. So, and actually, it was put on the table that if I was going to go with Ellen, maybe I shouldn't go at all to my own premiere.
So why do you think you ended up getting the role anyways?
Harrison Ford wanted to work with me. I don't know. Harrison and I had a really wonderful chemistry from the second we walked in the door. And the blessing of that entire movie is the message that talent wins out. And it's not to say that there weren't a million talented actresses lined up and wanting to do that part. There were. We just had something special. And I think in Hollywood, still with all the malarkey that goes on and will continue to go on forever, there is a reality that something special, if you can create a magic on screen, it is so hard to deny. It is so hard to just stop that feeling because Harrison and I connected, and that movie would not have worked had we not been connected. And I think whoever, I give Harrison Ford all the credit, but certainly I wouldn't have gotten hired if other people didn't feel that way. But he really went up to bat for me and said, this is who I want to work with. And, he's my hero. It's the funniest thing because he was the first person I ever saw in a movie. He became the hero to the world because of that movie and then became my personal hero because I thought that he was just the most incredible man who could have gotten any single girl in Hollywood to do that movie with him. And even with all the controversy, I want her. I mean, he's just, he's my hero.
Why don't I play a clip from the movie? And this is a scene where, he's supposed to be taking you to Tahiti in a plane.
Right.
You're a fashion
right.
editor, and the
right.
plane crash lands on this desert island, and you're stuck there together, and you don't get
yeah.
along. So you're going to get some water. You have your jugs to get water, and you end up, there's a little, waterfall, and you're
yeah,
in
yeah.
it, up to your neck, and he's still on land, and as you're in the water, you feel a snake go up your pants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that scene.
Here's
that
the scene.
That was very fun to shoot. Oh, okay.
Hey, Gwen!
Huh? What? What?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but, I'm having a bit of a problem.
What's the problem?
Some sort of creature has just swum up my pants. I'm guessing a snake.
Oh. That's bad.
So, what do I do? I mean, I could reach down and grab it.
No, that could be risky. Might be poisonous.
Well, right. But on the other hand, if it's poisonous and will bite me, do I want to allow it to continue to swim around in my shorts?
All good questions.
Would you just give me some advice, all right? Just advice, input, anything, give it to me. I'm very open at this particular juncture, all right?
Just stand still.
Still.
Stand still.
That's Anne Heche and Harrison Ford in a scene from 6 Days and 7 Nights. So do you think finally that the fact that you made public your relationship with Ellen before making this movie affected how it played at the box office, how viewers related to you as the leading lady in it, any of that stuff that everybody in Hollywood worries about?
Well, sure it affected it because people made such a big deal out of it. If they had just been quiet about it, then the public would have, would have gone to see the movie. I mean, first of all, the movie did well, so that wasn't a concern. I think it would have done better had there not been so much hoopla around a debate that doesn't matter. I mean, can Anne Heche pull off playing a straight girl? I mean, one, I had a lot more practice being straight than I did gay, so I would hope that it's not like love changes when you change the gender. How you express it doesn't all of a sudden become a gay expression. It's just an expression of love. And any role you're doing, you pretend to be somebody else. Otherwise, it wouldn't be called acting. So the whole thing, the whole argument, the whole ridiculousness of it, to me, just made a debate for the public that wasn't up to them to debate. They should go to a movie and expect that an actress is going to be who she is on screen, not drag her through the mud questioning whether or not she can pull off a certain part. You don't do that before movies come out. I mean, after movies come out, people do that. But this whole 1 year debate leading up to it coming out was just, I think, a waste of time. And people jumped on the bandwagon talking about it. And then more people talked about it. And it became this whole press hoopla, which honestly wasn't fair to me and certainly wasn't fair to Harrison or anybody who was releasing the movie and, expecting it to be an entertaining, beautiful romantic comedy, which is what it was. And it's just too bad that they made it about something else because I think people would have even more people would have gone to see it.
My guest is Anne Heche. She wrote and directed one of the three stories in the new HBO movie, If These Walls Could Talk, Part 2, which premieres on Sunday. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actress Anne Heche. I'm wondering if you and Ellen disagreed at all early on about how to handle the public aspect of your relationship. Because, on the one hand, you had always, up until that point, been straight, and you had the example of your father about how a secret life can kill you.
Right.
Whereas Ellen had been gay all her life and had been very closeted, you know, worried about the impact it would have on perceptions of her and her career. So you're really coming at this relationship from completely different places. I mean, from opposite places.
Yeah, yeah.
And so your perceptions probably about how one handles the public face of a private relationship would likely be pretty different.
Well, actually, I mean, we were both so amazed that people cared as much as they did. I mean, Ellen knew that it was going to be a big deal that her character was coming out on the show because people had started to pick it up, and rumors started before they were even given the okay to do the show. And so she knew that people were starting to talk and it was going to be a big thing. We, however, as a couple, I certainly was incredibly naive. I had no understanding of the fact that somebody would care that I fell in love with her. To me, it was not even a consideration. I mean, Ellen told me the night that we met, and, this is a big deal. This shouldn't be an experiment. People are looking at me going, who the heck are you with? And I didn't even know who she was or, you know, that she had this big TV show that she was coming out on. I had no idea. Part of what's carried over from my childhood is that I don't watch television. And so I didn't know all this hoopla, and she's saying, there's a reporter standing over my shoulder watching you write down my number. I'm like, whatever, who cares? Well, of course, everybody cared, and I found that out within a couple of days. But one thing that we kept saying to each other, I mean, it brought us, I mean, talk about testing a relationship within the first week. We just kept saying, you know what, there's nobody to call to say, well, last time you came out and you were, you know, in the movies, or last time you came out and you were on TV, how did you handle it? You know, we were it. We didn't have anybody to call. And certainly we were getting messages to just shut up, which didn't go along with either of our belief systems. And so we didn't know. I mean, certainly the way we expressed ourselves, you know, we look back and go, gee, I wish I could have done that differently. You know, sometimes I think, I mean, I've certainly found more understanding and have been educated in the last few years about so many stories of so many different gay individuals and how difficult their journey is. And
mine was very easy.
I don't know. I mean, I am such a blabbermouth about the truth, and I still am. But I think the way that I would have approached it was with more – see, but I couldn't have known. What I wish I would have known is more of the journey and the struggle of individuals in the gay community or couples in the gay community, because I would have couched my enthusiasm with an understanding that this isn't everybody's story. My story isn't everybody's story. My joy and my experience and my knowing of falling in love with her – is a fantasy to most people, and there are very few people who get to have that knowing. I don't know why I got blessed with it, but I went out and blurted it out like it was the easiest thing in the world, and it was, but the experience for most people is not easy, and my compassion and understanding of this incredible and diverse group of people has broadened, and so I've learned more how to communicate and how to be compassionate without basically coming out and saying, hey, listen, I fell in love with a woman and it's no big deal. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me and I'm going to ask her to marry me. You know, I just was like, stood on the top of the mountain and shouted it to the world. I don't think there's anything wrong with having done that, but I think my language could have been perhaps a little more subtle, a little more compassionate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's another Hollywood question I want to ask you. You've worked with
Hollywood question. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
For $250,000.
Yeah, okay, great. I want to go for the million.
You've worked with leading men who are around your age, like Vince Vaughn, and you've also you've also worked with leading men who are much older, like Harrison Ford and Ed Harris. And I know, like, for
and Bob De Niro and Dustin Hoffman.
But those weren't romantic.
No, they weren't. I still got to work with them, and I have to put that in.
Right. No, I'm talking about like romantic situations.
Yes,
so certainly. I'm wondering, you know, like for actresses who are in their 40s, a lot of them feel really bad that the men who are in their 40s, 50s, even 60s still get leading men roles, but they're always up against younger actresses.
I don't blame them.
As one of those younger actresses, I'm wondering how you feel.
Oh, I totally understand. First of all, I live with a 41-year-old actress who goes through so many of those issues, let alone being gay and how much more difficult, what that adds to her platter. I think it's completely unfair. I mean, and one thing I must say is that Michael Douglas is doing a movie right now where he is playing with somebody his own age, Frances McDormand, who is the most genius actress on the planet. And the fact that he is doing that with her and she with him, to me, is a step in the right direction and saying, yes, this can be done, and what a glorious relationship. And put those two on screen together, you're going to have a great movie. I mean, in my opinion, because I just think they're both so terrific. So I think that, I mean, unfortunately, that's brave for a man to do in this day and age in Hollywood. It's brave for him to be with a woman who's more his own age. And I think it's unfair what happens to women. They get dropped off. You know, the joke is true. After 40, I'm done. You know, that's so horrifying to me. And I hope I can help change that in Hollywood by making more adult movies with adults. Which is what I want to do. I mean, I have two leading ladies who are both 41 years old in my movie. I applaud it. I think it's the most beautiful thing to watch when people are who they are. Not that young girls aren't cute to look at, but for me, certainly when I was working with Harrison, I said we have to put the age thing in or it's stupid that we're doing this. We can't just pretend that we're not years apart here. And bless his soul, he put it in, which was really great that we added that to that movie. There are other times it's not explained. With Ed Harris, listen, I think he's a fabulous actress. I love Agnieszka, and I was thrilled to be able to get the part. But it's not like I'm going to go, no, you can't hire me.
Anne Heche, she wrote and directed one of the three stories in the new HBO movie, If These Walls Could Talk, Part 2, which premieres on Sunday. It stars her partner, Ellen DeGeneres, and Sharon Stone. Coming up, fumbling for words to describe the new century and the one that just ended. This is Fresh Air.